Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. You know something? I was listening to your intro, which I absolutely totally love, and it reminded me of the days way back when I used to go out dancing in 3-inch heels, you know, till 3 a.m. Like,
yep.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yes, and it always makes me think of Chick Cashman, who is my dear pal in Tucson, where we recorded that track 4 or 5 years ago, and all I can say is, Serena just came back from the beautiful state of Arizona, and
That's right.
We'll get to all of that. We're gonna chat Serena right up. We're just gonna extract information from every single little experience that we can pull on.
Oh, you're
I'm
gonna
so
you're
excited.
Gonna get all my deep dark
her.
Secrets.
No,
we have
you,
ways
I mean,
of making you talk.
Me and you were so gracious and so. You had done so much research to make me feel comfortable, like you actually were interested. And I really treasured that very much. Thank you so much.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I mean, it was such an honor. It was an honor to interview you. And it's like, I just really, you know, I could tell just by, you know, what I read about you and what I'd seen about you and things. I said, this woman has like a wild creative mind. And that is really what I want to, you know, really what I want to see. And boy, you didn't disappoint at all. We had the wildest conversation.
We did, didn't we? We just had the best old time, and we didn't want it to be end. We were like, oh, we'll have to do this again.
Exactly. And why don't we do it live and invite Rick and make it a party?
Yeah. So
that
here we are,
fun.
Ladies and gentlemen. We're doing it again. Thank God you're here, Rick.
Yes.
Because we could just disappear in a puff of smoke. We might just, like, you know, extrapolate into the universe because these things are possible.
Yeah, and that's what I just totally love. You get three creatives together, and God knows where this is all going to go or, you know, whatever. But that's what's really fun. I mean, that's what the whole thing is about, and that's, I think, what we got into when we had our conversation for your interview, that, you know, you can go off on 5 million tangents, and it's all cool because eventually you find your way back.
Yes,
hopefully.
Yes, exactly. And it never was a question of actually going from A to B. I think that linear thinking that we we're all really good. You know, we're good. Mm. We don't throw it away when we leave school. You know, we're like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Linear's cool. I get it. You know, there's a year behind and a year ahead. And but that circular, cyclical thing that one learns from any artistic discipline,
mm-hmm.
that throws a wrench in a spanner in the works. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, it's intimidating, I think, because you have to be able, you have to be willing to jump with both feet into the chaos, you know, and just kind of let things happen and not try to make things happen the way you think they should. And I think it's just that letting go and kind of sort of trusting that you will either find your way back or find your way to the destination you're supposed to be at. Travel is like that as well. It's all like that.
I was going to say, this is your mantra, please. Cause that, now, how did this start for you, Serena? Tell us, as a teenager.
I'll tell you something. Well, as a teenager, interestingly, even before I was a teenager, like as soon as I could hold a crayon, I was always drawing, I was creating things, so that was always just something that I just did, and but it wasn't something that, you know, this is the 50s, early 60s, and you know, it wasn't something that you aspire to, you know, becoming a full-time professional artist. It just wasn't, you know, just wasn't in the mindset. It was like something you kind of did on the side. And then while you went to school, went to college and got a real job that earned real money. So the whole thought of becoming a professional artist didn't even enter my mind. So what I would do is my bedroom was my studio. And I just created, closed the door. And I remember thinking, gosh, you know, if people really knew what I was really like behind that door, they would really get a really good glimpse of who Serena really truly was, because the other part of me was, you know, out in, you know, the regular world, earning a living, getting the day job. So I had like a corporate career for 18 years in the travel business, because that was a way to kind of sort of be creative, because travel's my other passion anyway. So I thought, travel, great, you know, it's, you know, pretty creative. You can travel all over the place. It was fun. And that was kind of my way of being creative until the internet took over, and then that took all the creativity out of the business for anybody who worked in it. So it wasn't a matter of becoming an artist. It's like I always was, but I never thought I was a real one.
I never doubted for a moment that you were an artist. No, I was content. I actually was asking you about the travel, and you answered.
Yes.
Yes, no, that's what I meant. I love the fact that your corporate experience, the conditioning of society, actually fed your artistic passion. That interests me.
Yeah, it you know something, the artistic passion comes out, you know, if you're an artist, or no matter what you are. I mean, I think that comes out sooner or later. You know, and like I said,
but isn't it great that you were able to travel and all the time?
Yeah.
The artist in you was like totally satisfied because you were whipping around and enjoying all this wonderful vision and activity. Mm. You know what travel does, how it turns on every part of you.
Oh, it totally does. But I'll tell you, it depends on how you travel. And I remember one of the first books that I ever read was by Rick Steves, and it was called Europe Through the Back Door. And it was a book, because Rick Steves, I don't know if you're familiar with what he does or how he does it, but he wrote this fabulous book about, you know, just not going out into the world and, you know, expecting things to be A, B, C. You know, going to these places that were out of the way that nobody's ever heard of. Don't go to all the restaurants that all the tourists go to. You know, really go and try to find what the locals are doing. So that has always been my travel mantra. I always had a backpack, and I, you know, bed and breakfast. You know, I wouldn't stay in major hotels unless, you know, for the travel industry, sometimes you had to. I mean, I've stayed at the Waldorf Astoria, and I've stayed at tiny little B&Bs in, you know, the center of Barbados. So it's how you go about doing it. So I would always go and I would seek out the locals, and I would say, you know, where's a good place to eat or where's a good thing to see? And you end up on these fabulous adventures as a result. Like for example, when I went to Barbados, and, you know, for example, in Barbados, there's a lot of these all-inclusive resorts, which I have done, and they're fabulous, and it's a great way to let go. But, you know, my friends and I, what we would do is, like, we would go, you know, walk into these little, you know, pathways into neighborhoods and just kind of see how everybody lived, you know, outside of the whole resort tourist area thing. And we came across, you know, these two guys that were just, you know, hanging out, and they're like, hey, you know, we know this really, really cool rum shop. You want to go, you know, check it out? It's way up in the hills. We're like, yeah, sure. So here we are, you know, we're like all of like, what, 20 years old, hiking up this hill to see this rum shop. And now halfway, I look back at my friend, and I'm like, oh, my God, are we, like, on our way to being murdered or something? Because we didn't know these guys, and, you know, you're in the middle of Barbados, and two girls, you know, and two guys. I'm like, oh, God, this is probably going to be the end of me right here. But, hey, Barbados, it's beautiful. Why not? And we did end up at this stunning rum shop and owned by this, you know, this little old lady. She'd had it in her family for years, and that is where we spent our vacation, because we'd go up there and, you know, not only have fabulous local rum, but, you know, then we'd be sampling all the local delicacies, fish cakes and stuff, because she goes, every time the Americans would come in, she says, she'd give us something. Oh, you Americans, you have to try this and you have to try that. And we were eating all sorts of really weird things and just having a ball and just meeting local people and really getting a feel for what the place was like. So traveling close to the ground.
Yes, and it's so... I get such a it excites me. It's one of the things that I've done all my life, and so I cleave to people who enjoy travel as much as I do. Now, let me ask you, and I know Rick's got 1,000 questions, so I've got to limit mine. But please give. I had the best time in Montreal when I was with my mom and dad, and I know that you had a studio and a loft in Montreal, and. Did some very interesting work there. Would you just like give us a, you know, a postcard of that time? You're such a great creative and such a wonderful artist and has a way with words, that wonderful broadcaster that you are. Please describe it for us, because folks who haven't been there need to go to Montreal.
Well, Montreal, I believe, has been rated one of the most creative cities in the world. There's a whole bunch of so many artists. I mean, there's you know, tons and tons of artists that live there, and the creativity level is through the roof. And you also, I mean, keeping in mind that you also have the Canadian government that highly funds the arts. So there's lots of grants and lots of really fabulous artistic things that can take place because it's funded by the government. So, you know, there's art everywhere. There's, you know, there's jazz festivals and there's music festivals and there's film festivals and art galleries and artists doing, you know, murals and everything. And it's one of those cities that what I love about Montreal, first of all, it's part of my heritage because I'm half Canadian. So that's, you know, part
too.
Of my – are you really half Canadian?
Yes, my mom was from the Kootenay Lake, British
awesome. Yahoo! So, yeah, so it's like,
we
so
talking,
here we are.
You were like my sister. It was so, I was thinking, this
that
is
must
so
be it.
Weird.
It's a Canadian thing,
okay.
Eh?
No. It's we're a couple of Canucks. What can I tell you? Half Canucks.
There you go. Oh, good gracious. Yeah, and it's, you know what it is? You know what I love about Montreal? I mean, I had spent a year in France. Actually, it was my junior year in college when I thought I was going to be a French teacher, but that's a whole other long story. And the thing about France is I'm probably too much of a North American to live in France full time. I mean, I love France and I love the whole, but there's something about that European attitude that I just absolutely adore. The way they see life, they at the time that was like the 70s, of course. You know, you had an hour left for lunch and everybody, you know, met people at cafes and it was a wild, vibrant culture. And you took 2 hours to enjoy a meal and you discussed, you know, everything from politics to whatever. So it's really vibrant, socially. Conscious and culturally conscious. And Montreal is kind of like having a foot in Europe and a foot in the States. So it's this fabulous.
We love that.
Oh, it's just a set. And even the language,
yeah.
I speak French. And of course, I learned France French, although my dad was French Canadian. But, you know, I learned France French. And, you know, when you look at the way somebody from Paris swears and the way that somebody from Montreal swears, it's a completely different thing. I mean, it's, you know, France is like, oh, merde. He's very polite, and it's very nice, and it's well-pronounced. And then you get, you know, Montrealers, it's like, golly, the tabernacle. I mean, it just sounds more guttural.
We are en de belle de connaisserie.
De connaisserie. Oh, my God. We're going to have to watch out, man. We're going to fall off the edge here. so much fun.
And
so
then I'll start talking from the valet, baby. Je suis du valet. Eh bien, nous sommes des fils. Qu'est-ce que je veux dire? Eh oui.
Oh, my God. It's just
too
much.
Sorry.
It's all good.
The comedian in me is playing hooky
today. It's coming out. So you have, I mean... There is such that wonderful dichotomy because you have, you know, the French-speaking Canadians, you know, in Quebec, and you have them in New Brunswick, and then you have the English Canadians, and then of course Montreal, you have this bilingual thing. And I remember when I used to travel to Montreal before I moved up there, and you know, you'd be on the subway, and then you'd hear these people having a conversation, and they would be talking in French, then in English, then in French, then in English, and going back and forth between the two languages, like. You know, like it was nothing. It's like, and here I'm a kid, and I'm going, I want to do that. That was my life goal. Besides, you know, in addition to a whole bunch of other stuff, but it's like just to be able to do that. So after a few years of living in Montreal, I found myself in a conversation on the metro, you know, talking in French and then in English, and with a friend of mine. I'm like, oh my God, I made it! Yeah, you know, one goal knocked off my list. There we go. It was fun, but it's understanding those two cultures, and I think too when you're learning a different language. And when you're traveling, you're learning a different culture. And that's very artistic. That's very artful. And that's the whole, you know, we're going to talk about the whole artful vagabond thing. It's an artful way of traveling and an artful way of being in the world and an artful way of seeing people. Just, you know, embracing different cultures and embracing art and embracing music and just you know, getting out there and enjoying it instead of expecting things to look like way back home, you know. It's just embracing.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I was letting you finish the sentence and the thought because that is very generous of you. That is a very generous view of travel, don't you think, Rick? Mm.
Oh, yes.
You know, and... I wish everyone felt like that. But, you know, because a lot of people don't understand that you're not moving around at your convenience. You're moving around at someone else's invitation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and like I said, that you know, because I like having worked in the business for a lot of years, and I would, you know, and I would work with people who were going to be traveling, mostly groups, but some individuals as well. And you know, and so many people would really, you know, I kind of felt sorry for them because, you know, they would go and they would stay in the fancy hotels and they would, you know, eat in only the recommended places or places where other tourists would eat in. And it's like you're not really experiencing, you know, what a place is all about. But it's a scary thing, and I can understand that. I mean, it's you really have to let go of what you think you know, and you have to have a certain amount of trust in other people.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly right. Basically, you know, if you haven't done what you did or what Rick did or what rock and roll bands have been doing for the last 50, 60 years, being the ambassadors of goodwill to all the places where they went and played. And that's what it was all about, was trust. And the music built our trust.
Yeah.
And we were talking yesterday on Facebook with the kids that posted the stuff about the, you know, the pirate ships in the North Sea and Radio Luxembourg, how the music connected us. Our youth and music and our dreams for the future. And what you're talking about, Serena, is exactly that, because you took your dreams and experienced them, traveled, and then became this remarkable, beautiful sculptress and all of... Now, tell us about the... I love everything, of course, with the gold inlay and all this wonderful... can you give us a bit more? I'm losing my fluency because I don't know, and I need you to explain it to me.
Okay, well, the artwork kind of evolved from I'm working in the travel industry, you know, and even though you're traveling a lot, you're sitting in a cubicle most of the time arranging, you know, trips and things for other people and businesses and corporations and things like that. And I finally had gotten to the point where I'm like, you know something? I cannot do this anymore. I just cannot. I really have to just get out and just do this art thing, because I hadn't been, you know, doing anything creative. I mean, I used to play piano and I used to play flute and I used to do all these really creative things, and I just kind of let them go because I was working so hard. And so I really kind of literally just quit my job, one day to the next. I said, you know, I told my boss, God bless him, he still speaks to me. And he didn't doubt it for a minute. He says, I always knew you were an artist. So he was less surprised than I was by my actions.
That's so nice.
And when you open a door, then, you know, when you open yourself up to the possibilities, then the universe kind of steps right in and helps you out, because I'm like, okay, I'm going to be an artist. What do I do? And a friend of mine says, you know, he says, my girlfriend has this studio in the arts district, in Montreal's arts district, which at the time was St. Henry. It was one of them. It was kind of like a Soho. There was like thousands of artists that were living in these big old buildings that used to be on a canal, that they all used to be old mills, and they were all living and working there. I mean, thousands of artists. So, and she said, you know, would like to have somebody to share the studio with. Don't worry about paying. You know, she just wants another creative energy. And she goes, I know you're just starting out. I'm like, oh, my God. So here I am. I quit my day job. The next day, there I am in the studio going, oh, my God, I've got a studio. How cool is that? And how I got working with Gourds was, a friend of mine I knew had she used to live in Mexico. And in a small place called Olina, Mexico, they make lacquered gourds, where they they make lacquer out of a sap from a particular tree, and then they cover the gourd, and then they carve it, and then they put a different color on and carve it again, and it's absolutely stunning. I have not seen any in North America, but she had brought them from her time there, and they were gourds that they had covered this way, and they were I never even seen a gourd. I didn't even know what one was. I'm like, this is great. What is it? And so she explained to me, I'm like, oh, my God, I've got to do this. I don't know why, but I've got to do this. And this is the days before Internet, so I had to go to the library to figure this out, and decided that, you know, doing lacquer was way too toxic. So I just started carving and wood burning and just doing a whole bunch of things. And then I came across an article where I saw somebody had gilded some wooden sculptures and things. I'm like, gilding, wow, that's pretty cool. So I traveled to London, England, to study with a master gilder in London. I was there for, a couple weeks, and brought my gourds over. She thought I was completely daft. What is this? You know, I traveled to London with these big gourds. Everybody else had, you know, the frames that you usually gild. You know, you usually gild picture frames. Serena arrives with her gourds. And, of course, so I was the teacher's pet for the longest time and learned how to gild, basically, in gold and in silver and in copper. And it was just fabulous. And so I use that in all of my work now. And so it evolved. I mean, I'd never seen other gourd work. There was no Internet. So I just sat in that little studio with my friend painting in one corner and me just playing with gourds in the other corner. So I quit my day job to become a gourd artist who does this, you know.
I love this. This is so cool. And they're so beautiful.
They are.
I wanted to hear that story. I hope you don't mind, but
I love it.
I like to contextualize everything, you know, so
yeah.
I know how
yeah.
it came about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
So,
yeah. Well,
so
you know, here's
the thing to me.
Well, here's the thing too, and I realized this since, and we'll talk about Arizona again, I'm sure, later in the program. But when I went to Arizona, I mean, that's where the Southwest is, where a lot of gourd art, you know, really happens, because it's the Southwest, and that's where my gourds come from. As a matter of fact, when I buy them and ship them here to work on. And I wanted to create. I didn't want to copy the Southwest gourd art because, I mean, it's everybody knows it. And when people think gourd art, a lot of them think Mexico, they think Peru, the Peruvian gourds, they think that. I wanted to do gourd work that represented the Northeast, where I come from, because I grew up in upstate New York and the Adirondacks, and, you know, hiking the woods and the Green Mountains of Vermont. This is where I grew up. I said, I would like to get that feeling of being in the woods, of you know, campfires in the woods, and you know, walking through the woods and the trees and the old logs that have been down for years and everything. So the work that I did, I worked on that. And actually, I moved from Montreal back to the States, back to where I grew up, to be able to do that, to be able to learn, to put what I know into the work. So that's why it looks the way it does.
Yeah, they're just gorgeous, aren't they, Rick?
They are. I wish you could see Serena's work up close and personal. The pictures I posted does not do them credit. She's got amazing pieces. And what I like about your creative process, Serena, is, you know, I remember sitting around a campfire with you, and there was just like these moments of total illumination where you went, wow, that's it. That's what I'm going to do.
I get a lot of illuminations from campfires in the woods. Yeah.
Though, don't they? They dance in your mind and answer your questions. It's scary. I love that so much.
Yeah. Well, Rick and I. I don't know if you want to get into this right now, but how Rick and I met. I'm sure. I don't know if you have had talked about this in previous shows, but Rick is a firekeeper.
Yes, and please tell the story, because our friends who are listening, I'm sure they do not know. We know, but they don't know.
Yeah, because we go back. How long has it been, Rick? I mean, it's been.
Oh, Josh was like, what, 7 or 8 when I met you.
Oh God, we're dating ourselves now. It's like holy. Oh my God, because you had come out to Whitehall to be a firekeeper.
Yep.
For a small powwow that we had that we had here, and it was the most fabulous powwow, and Rick was the most exceptional firekeeper. And, you know, so we talked a lot, you know, during, because, you know, he was there throughout the whole, tending the fire throughout the whole weekend. And then I also learned that he was an artist, and the drawings that he was doing at the time were very Native American oriented, black and white. And I'm like, oh my God, not only is he a firekeeper, but he's an artist. And so we just like totally clicked. It was great. And we just hung out.
I bet. Yeah.
It was great. So what I decided to do, the next year he came, because then he became an annual, you know, an annual event for the, you know, tending the fire for
the
powwow.
You became a fixture, Rick.
He was a fixture, and everybody came to see Rick because he was so fabulous. And so I asked him, because I had started my blog, Artful Vagabond, and one of the things I wanted to write about, because I wanted to write not about art, but also culture, which is, you know, and travel and things.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he wouldn't mind my writing about how he does the firekeeping. Because when you do firekeeping in the Abenaki tradition, you stay awake. Like usually in other traditions, you have, you know, several firekeepers that will do like a relay throughout the whole weekend. But in his tradition, they do it just one, and you stay awake throughout the whole weekend. So you, it's like
for
a 36-hour,
and 2 nights.
Yeah, 36-hour vigil. And I said, do you mind if I stay awake with you, if I could? Me who loves to sleep, you know, it's like, what am I doing? And he thought about it, and then he got back to me afterwards. He goes, yeah, because, I mean, he knew me well enough to know that I would, you know, treat the subject properly, because it's a disappearing art. And you can talk more about that, Rick, about how that's, you know, traditionally, that's, it's, I don't, how many firekeepers are
Please
there left
do,
now?
Please do, Rick. Explain
well,
the importance of it, too.
Yeah, I mean, the role of firekeeper is in many cultures, many, many cultures. And I sort of fell into it. You know, there are people that choose to be firekeepers, but I kind of fell into it, and it became a calling many years ago. A friend had was putting on an event at the Shelburne Museum, and she came up to me and said that she needed a firekeeper for the event, and would I do it? And, you know, I said to myself, well, you know, what's this all about? You can just keep a fire. I mean, you start a fire and keep it going. So little did I know, it was sort of a setup because at that moment I suddenly opened a door that I never knew existed. And to make a long story short, eventually I sat underneath a tree for about 8 hours with teachers and a certain man who became my mentor, and received teachings about firekeeping. So it's not just something you do at an event. It's actually a spiritual path. and it's a lifelong calling. So no matter, even if I don't do any more firekeeping, actual firekeeping, I'm still a firekeeper, and I'm expected to live a certain way because of it. And it's a great honor, and it's a spiritual position. It's not something that you're encouraged to go around and advertise. So I don't. I mean, it's odd that I'm talking about it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did not
think of whether or not that was a,
no, this
a
is fine.
Thing to ask.
This is
I'm
fine.
So sorry.
No, Angie, this is fine because Serena is right, is that, you know, the traditions are fading in certain cultures. And
that was why I wanted you to explain. Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I wasn't being impolite.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. No, I didn't get that at all.
Oh, good. Okay.
But Serena came to me.
I'm just curious.
Yep. Serena came to me, and she asked if it would be all right for her to witness the ceremony. And so I had to really think about it because it's not something you just do. It's not like entertainment, and it's not like
a show.
And
exactly.
It's a spiritual practice. So I had gotten to know Serena pretty good, and I felt, you know, her heart was in the right place. And she had come to me in the traditional way, and I thought about it, and I said, sure, why not? I said, you know, and I didn't have to say this to her. I said, as long as you treat the whole thing, you know, seriously and with the respect that it's needed, you're welcome to experience it and then write about your experience. So she met me at sunrise on the first morning. Sounds like a Bob Dylan line, doesn't it?
Oh, I hope somebody writes a song about this.
It was sort of like a Bob Dylan song, by gosh. Early one morning, the sun was shining.
Well, you know something? I think he was there.
Yeah, he probably
was. He was probably there.
But so Serena met me by the Hudson River, and I have to do this whole ceremonial thing prior to the sun coming up, so I have to prepare the circle with certain medicines and do different things, and then as the sun comes up is when you get the fire going, and it has to be facing east so that the first ray of light hits the site, and at that moment you light it so that it becomes one with the rising of the sun, and then it's my duty to keep that going the whole event of, if it's a powwow. I mean, there are other ways to fire keep. Some of them are sweat lodges, things like that. I've been asked to do a lot of different cultural events, and one of them was being the firekeeper for 3,000 Girl Scouts one weekend.
Oh, perfect.
That's another story. But
yeah.
But anyways, Serena, it was amazing having her there because, you know, she got to witness what happens during that time period. And it's not just sitting there by a fire. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen during the night. And you can be sitting there, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of your eye, somebody will walk towards the fire, and they'll sit there in silence for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden, they start telling you their story. And it's like counseling. You know, you're sitting there, and isn't it, Serena?
Yeah.
They like, drop it, and then they go off into the darkness again. And later on, somebody else can come by, you know?
Do you remember now this was like 3 o'clock, this was like it was dark, like it was like 3 o'clock in the morning it must have been, and it was like pitch dark. And you have to you have to understand that we're in a public park where, and you know, I mean, thankfully there were people, you know, the vendors who had come were staying overnight in the park. So what they did is they brought their campers, there were a couple of teepees. But everybody was asleep, so we were kind of in this, it was almost like an encampment, really, you know, because everybody was there. You could hear snoring in the background.
Yep.
But it was just the two of us, and it was kind of spooky. I mean, we were in a small town, but it's still, it's dark. And all of a sudden, we see this a light coming up the boulevard. I'm like, what the heck is that? It's just one light, and it's coming really slow. It didn't look like a car. and it was a man on a bicycle. I'm like, what the heck is this? So he pulls up, an older, you know, older gentleman, and he pulls up, parks his bike, comes over to the fire, and of course I've got 1 foot ready to run, you know, and I'm watching Rick's face. Rick doesn't say nothing, right? Because I figured he knows, he's done this before, you know, he's really good at sussing out people. So I'm there, like I'm just poised to you know, run as fast as I can. And he comes up and he just sits down, doesn't say anything, doesn't look at either of us. You know, and Rick just puts his hand on my arm as if to say, you know, just let him be, don't talk, don't whatever. So I didn't say nothing. He didn't say nothing. We all just sat there. He put his hands over the fire, and he was there for a good, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
Not a word, no eye contact, nothing.
Yep.
And then he just got up and he left.
Yep.
And my heart was like pounding. I'm like, oh, that's it. He's going to pull out a knife. Oh, my God. And it was really, it's amazing the people who show up.
Oh, yes. I mean, I could tell you stories. I could be on the show all day and just tell you stories of things that have happened. But, you know, some beautiful things have happened at the fire. And each fire has its own personality. It's always different. Depending on where you are doing it and what's around you and the spirits that are around you, it changes. And there are times when I've been asked traditionally to be a firekeeper at an event. You know, you don't just say, yes, I'll do it. You have to think about it. You have to pray over it. You have to, like, really know in your heart that this is going to be a good thing. And I have said no a couple of times to different people because of the energy I knew that was there.
Yep.
And there's a whole bunch of different things you have to do to be a firekeeper. And, you know, I've done fires where people come over and say, oh, let me do this. I know how to do this. And I just step back and say, okay, go ahead. As long as they're not putting metal in the fire or trash or things like that. And, you know, they're all puffed up and talking to people. I'm the firekeeper right now. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, it's like I've witnessed people making total fools of themselves doing that. And, but because there's a certain way of approaching it and doing it and being there. And Serena wrote an excellent story about her experience. And I was quite honored that she accompanied me and took the time to really experience that and write about it in a very honorable way. It was just fabulous.
Serena, I would love to make sure that we have lots of time to talk about what you have planned with The Artful Vagabond and your TV crew. So let me ask a question right now. Please fill us in. Give us a time frame because we're going to get you back, of course, to talk about it again. I just, you know, please just fill us in because I'm all excited. And I looked at the time and I realized we needed to have a good 20 minutes.
Yep.
So we can chat about this and all the other things that we wanted to talk about with you. So please tell us about this and where is it going to be possible to see it? Is it all internet based or will it be on a network or a cable channel?
Okay. Well, basically, the show right now is we're working on a pilot. Basically, because in order to be able to pitch it to some of the cable programs that I do have in mind, we're going to have something. Because this is something that it's not like I have, like, you know, a long, illustrious career in filmmaking. Of course not. No, I jumped into something that I know nothing about. Like we said earlier, it's like it's not like I know nothing about it. It's like you know enough about one thing, about the creative process, and then you just surround yourself with creatives who do their job
happens. It's the same as being a corporate executive. You know what I mean? They go from one industry to another. It doesn't make any difference.
It's just moving industries.
Artist.
And basically what it is,
you go from one technique to another, and you're still the artist that you always were and are.
As an artist, it's kind of like you're just moving into a different medium. You know, if you're not sculpting in stone, then you're sculpting something else. So for me, it was another medium, and it was a way also to get the Artful Vagabond mission, concept, goal out there to a wider audience. Because when I started Artful Vagabond, it was all about kind of bringing the creative process into people's homes, so people can kind of get an idea of, you know, what goes on inside of an artist's mind and what's their life like. And so I had written, I did like a 365-day, in 2012, I did a 365-day series of posts and interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of artists, so that people could, just in celebration of the arts and the creative mind. So this is an extension of that, and it kind of
Bravo.
Came out of open studios. When people go to open studios,
mm-hmm.
they kind of, it, unlike going into a gallery, and I have nothing against galleries, but in a gallery, it's a little, sometimes can be intimidating for people, whereas you go into an open studio, you're in the artist's studio, you're talking with the artist, they're explaining what they do, and you're getting inside the feeling of what it's like to be in a creative environment. Because like when people used to come to my open studios, it's like they'd come in, they'd see my artwork, and some would buy, some would not, and it didn't make a difference, whatever. But they would leave, and sometimes I'd hear them leaving, and they're saying, oh, now I know what I'm going to do, how I'm going to paint my kitchen. And it had nothing to do with the art that I had, but for some reason, it opened up their creative minds so that they could be more creative, they could bring that creativity in their own lives. So it's
but
that
you
inspiration.
Mentioned that in your quote. That's always been your gift, is wanting
yes.
to unlock it. For I believe
yep.
every person in every audience is an artist. It doesn't
yes,
matter
totally.
If they haven't
yeah.
discovered it yet. And
yep.
you're giving them the keys and saying, yes,
yes.
open studios,
yep.
opportunity to talk to artists. This is so clear and so
yep.
brilliant of you, so illuminated.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping to do with this show. And I'm hoping, so basically the show is still in my head because it's, you know, we haven't gotten a full episode finished yet. We started the filming already. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out on a screen, you know, with people. I will be actually the host. So I'm producing it. I'm writing it. I'm directing it. It's going to be like, and I'll tell you how the whole thing happened, because when I first became an artist, I stopped watching TV because I found it was polluting my brain. And I said, no TV. I didn't watch TV for like 7 years. And it's like, no way. I moved back to upstate New York. I have an elderly parent living with me. And, of course, the TV's on constantly. And I somehow got hooked on the Food Channel. Because that is like, oh, my God, this is like so much fun. So after about the 110th episodes of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, watching Guy Fieri, you know, go to all the diners and drive-ins throughout America, I'm like, imagine what it would be like if someone did that and went to art studios and showed the creative process, the recipe for how you do this. And I thought,
right.
Well, why don't I do that? You know? And so I'm like, okay, so I'm not Guy Fieri. But, and then I got hooked also on Anthony Bourdain, the way he does his, you know, no reservations, and he goes and he talks to people. So basically the Artful Vagabond Project is going to be kind of Anthony Bourdain meets Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, if you can imagine that, for the art world.
And by the way, everyone listening, she makes this sound very easy. The truth of the matter is she's already been a guest reporter and broadcaster on Holiday, which is a British television show, which I have watched many times. It's very charming. It covers all sorts of places on the planet that are fabulous. So she's making this sound very off the cuff. But in fact, the discipline of her brilliant artistic mind brought this to fruition. Serena, that is brilliant.
Well, it's actually...
It's brilliant,
well,
girl.
Yeah. Or crazy, one or the other. Like, well, I'm hoping to God that you know, there's a studio executive out there that thinks it's just as brilliant. Actually, I do have people looking at it, to be honest with you. I mean, I can't mention names, but there are some people that are kind of watching what I do. Oh!
I don't know what happened.
What was that? We're not done yet. We're not done.
No. It just started to play. It just decided it liked you and wanted to join in.
We need to
dance tune.
That was just an exclamation point.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so sorry, honey. I walked past the computer and it turned on.
Angie has that effect on things.
It's those creative sparks, Angie.
About that.
It's all your creative sparks, Angie. That's what it has to be.
Yep.
I think it just loves you, Serena. It's a dance with me.
Okay, dance.
Fabulous.
Yes,
we may be able to actually see the shows in the next six months. I bet you.
In one way, in one way or another, I will get it out there. I mean, in one way or another, I mean, I will, because I'm one of those people that when I put myself into something and I throw that passion out there, the passion and the interest is returned tenfold. So I have, when I focus on something, I find a way to make it happen, and I just kind of let go as to the way I think it needs to happen. So I'm just putting it out there, making it, putting it out there, and then just it'll happen one way or another. It's just I don't know how yet, so I don't have
that
answer.
And I believe you, because I know that.
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a lot of people. I got a lot of people back, you know, behind me, going, yeah. But you know, and there's a lot of artists behind me too, because artists are kind of like, yeah, wouldn't it be cool just to for people to understand the artist's lifestyle and the way we see things and the way we view the world? Because it's beautiful. I mean, to see the world the way an artist sees the world. I mean, you're in love with the world because you have to be able to paint it and to be able to sculpt it. And if more people saw the world the way artists see the world, there would be far less wars, for sure. I mean, to me, I mean that sounds like really, you know, cheesy, but I think so. I mean, if you can look at something and paint something and make it look beautiful, I think we should just give everybody paintbrushes instead of machine guns. I don't know. I mean, that's just me.
Yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely right. No one has a fight about the beauty of a sculpture.
No.
Or the beauty of a painting. I mean, art students might wrangle over their favorite, but that's about it. You know what I mean? And they soon realize when they're actually standing. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky. The Impressionist exhibition was held at the Lausanne World Exhibition in 1964. And I was there doing Théâtre de Poche, acting for a week every day in a show called Barberine. And when you went to stand in front of those Monets and Pissarros and Cezannes, everyone shut up. It was so great. Everyone, but you know, Chinese people, Japanese people, people from all over Europe, from everywhere. And we all stood there. And then as everyone walked away, there would be these little tiny voices. Oh, yes, it's so beautiful. Oh, God. Because it takes away your desire to shout about it or above it or beyond it. Am I making any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because it's not, first of all, it's highly personal and highly subjective, and it takes away, because it's visual, I think it takes away the part of the brain that wants to rationalize and the part of the brain that talks. So when you take words out of it, and then the only exception to that is when you're writing poetry, because poetry is artistic. But when you take words out, then you're left with feelings, and you're left with emotions, and you're left with something that goes deeper. And I think that's what art does for people, without them realizing it.
Yes.
And yeah.
But you're right.
So I think it can.
Tell us about Arizona, sweetheart. Please, Miss Marina, tell us about your trip. What did you get to? What did you enjoy?
Well, let me tell you, Arizona, I'll tell you, I had all these, I had a to-do list, lots of art, lots of this, lots of that. Basically, I did a whole bunch of hiking, and it was, just to give you an example, like my friend and I met my friend out there. She owns Phoenix Vacation Condos, which I stayed in one of her condos. And we went to Sedona, and of course Sedona, with the red rocks and oh good Lord, I mean you arrive and it's almost like this place is surreal. I mean, I kept looking around going, this is like a Hollywood set, because there's no way this can be real. It is just like so incredibly beautiful, and I was glad I wasn't a painter, because I would be tempted to paint it, but you could just never do that. But there is a vibe there, and I'm sure it was the same. You lived in Tucson, where there's this, you kind of get lost in the present moment, and there's no past, there's no future. You're just there, and you enjoy it. And all those to-do lists, mañana, do it tomorrow.
it was just absolutely stunning. I was blessed to live there 16 years, and I had lived there another 4 or 5. So 21 years I've spent in Arizona trying to relive my home, which was invaded by the Turks in Cyprus. So the magic that you're speaking of does exist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge, and it's very, to, for me, I found it originally disconcerting, because I mean, I hiked a lot, you know, in the desert, which is in the southern part, south of Phoenix, and you're there, and you've got all the, you know, the cactus, the saguaros, and too, and you're looking, you know, it looks like a Hollywood, it looks like John Wayne could be coming over the mountain any minute, but nothing moves. You can see for miles, and you can't. There's nothing out there, and there's no. It doesn't smell like anything, and so it's a very disconcerting because everything is very dry. But then you realize all that beauty is there because the plants and the animals are very resourceful. There's not a lot of water, not a lot of food for everybody, but they make it work and they make it beautiful. And there isn't the lushness that you're going to find, you know, in a tropical environment or in the Adirondacks where I'm from. So getting used to that resourcefulness being laid out before you, it makes you think a lot differently. It's very interesting.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it is. You're right. I think the beauty of the desert is something that once you've fallen into the arms of the seductress, it's over.
Yep. You're done. You're cooked, man. You don't want to go home. Yeah.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. That's
and it.
It
takes a while.
I'll be here for 16 years.
Yeah.
I wrote Pop Sex there. I wrote four books there, Lipstick Legends, Pop Sex. You know what I mean? I just...
Yeah.
Michael built me this room out of PVC.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? PVC, and he just did it with conduit. Built me this big studio out in the garden.
Wow.
God.
And I just
sat
there
that.
And wrote.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that sense, there's that, it brings out your intuitive sense, because even when you're hiking, like, the thing I notice is that no matter where you go to hike, you know, the tourist spots or not, you know, they give you this map that is, you know, very approximate, because nobody really just hikes following a numbered trail. Basically, you just kind of go out and pick a trail that just kind of speaks to you. And that's the way everybody hikes out there. And it's a little disconcerting because you're in the middle of the desert. And, of course, you know, you have your bottles of water in case, you know, whatever. But you intuitively hike out and you intuitively hike back. So you have to really be aware of your surroundings. It's a real different mindset, actually, because nobody's telling you where to go or how to get there. And I think that's why there's a lot of artists there. There's a lot of mystics there. And it's not for nothing. Of course, you know, then they have the vortex sites, which you know, around the Sedona area particularly, where there's a lot of energy, very powerful. So it's not surprising there's a lot of artists. And the artists are embraced there. They have
– Yes.
They have – there's a hotel that – what they do is they have these, you know, sumptuous dinners that you can go to, and then they'll have an artist – come to the dinner and do a lecture while people are eating, you know, during, you know, so it's dining and wining, and then you've got the artist that is talking. It's like, all, you know, it's amazing. It's like they're very, very embraced. So it's nice
great.
To see.
It's wealthy consumers from the cruise brigade.
Besides, yeah.
I love them.
But you know what
come
I noticed?
Come on, baby, get your checkbook out.
Get it out. Open it up. But you know what was really cool too, and this is in Phoenix. I haven't gotten to Tucson, but in Phoenix, there's a lot of the highways that are fairly new. So you have all these overpasses, you know, and things.
Phoenix is god awful. It's a nightmare.
But I'll tell you something: the way they decorated, like they took local native artists and they put native insignia designs all on the overpasses and all on the landscaping on either sides of the highways. So you've got, you know, 20 overpasses, but they're stunningly beautiful because of the art. And I'm like, this is what art is supposed to do. I mean, you've got this stressful highway environment, but then you've got this beautiful, you know, design work that's been done by area artists that really just kind of calms you down. And
the prettiest one I've ever seen was a sculpture in Tucson. We gotta go to Serena. We gotta all go to Tucson. Rick.
Okay,
Carolyn,
it's a date.
We've
there
all
we
go. Gotta go.
All right, we're there. Okay.
And there's this big lizard covered in jewels, and you're driving along, and he's in the middle of the road on this median And I do a U-turn and I go round to the other side. I don't give a shit. I just do a U-turn and fuck go down the street and take a look at his other side because it's even prettier. He's green and rust and, I mean, 12, 15 feet long.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, we're just going to go.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to go.
Yeah. We're just going to go.
And
gonna,
what you were saying about the decorated free, you know, flyovers and that, Tucson is, they have the University of Tucson there, and it's quite, I mean, what they've got in Phoenix is great, and I'm really glad they've used the art to fix the mess that they made with those canyon roads. I get claustrophobia.
Yeah.
I drive down
those
things and those walls go up and I think I'm going to die.
Oh, yeah, it's very disconcerting, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it's nerve-wracking. They don't have that in Tucson. In Tucson, you can see around. You don't have to go down into the gully of despair.
Yeah, because it's and they drive pretty fast too. It's like, God, these guys are nuts. Yeah, they
sure
move
do.
Pretty quickly. Yeah, yeah.
So now,
tell
us what you are up to at the moment. What is there that folks can first of all, Serena has amazing website, The Artful Vagabond.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I think that pretty much links all the different. It's a very good website, darling. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Pretty much everything, doesn't it?
It does pretty much. I really have to add my because I do have Kobolowski.com, which is that's my artwork. I kind of have my artwork on a separate site because you know my own personal artwork to me is a separate thing from the Artful Vagabond project because the Artful Vagabond project is about everybody else. I'll add it. Yeah, it's just keeping the two separate because I still do the artwork, so the artwork is still there. And actually, I'll probably be planning a larger museum show down the road. But you know, if people want to get stay caught up with Artful Vagabond, they can subscribe or just keep checking back. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Just look up Artful Vagabond. Really easy to remember. And you know, I keep putting things out there, and I encourage people to like the pages, friend me, whatever, stay in touch, because it's great. I mean, we have a fabulous artist community that follows Artful Vagabond, that's on Facebook, that's on Twitter, and we all, back and forth. And it's fabulous because you see all these fabulous people from all over the world. I mean, I got people from Russia and from India and all
it
over.
Is. It's amazing.
That's
all.
Africa.
And artists get along.
They do.
What's not to like? Artists get along. It's so much fun. It makes one know that harmony and agreement and concord is possible.
It is. And you know something, and I'll tell you, and I'm getting way ahead of myself, but, what the heck if you don't have goals? I would really love, once the Artful Vagabond TV project gets launched, I would eventually love to do it, to make it international. And to go to some place, like Russia, or to go to some place like China, or go to some place like, whatever, and then show what the artists are doing there, because I'll tell you something. I did a curatorial tour a few years back to the Yukon. And because it was a curatorial tour, I was brought around to like 17 artist studios throughout the Canadian Yukon. And what a great way to discover a new place through the eyes of the artists. So it was just like such a deep experience because, you're seeing the artwork that was created there by artists who were there, and then they're telling you their stories. And that was just like so incredibly powerful. And if I can do that with art and bringing, the art of China or the art of Russia or the art of other, Afghanistan, and getting artists to talk about what they do and why they do it. Seeing the world through the eyes of artists could completely change how people view other countries and each other.
Yes.
That's right.
And we have the internet now. So if we've been given the tools, it's our job to do this. And I'm so proud that, really, it's brilliant what you're doing, Serena.
Thank you.
It's brilliant.
We'll see how many other people feel the same way. I hope they do. I'm hoping.
I think it's bloody brilliant.
Well, basically,
that's fantastic.
It comes from the heart. I mean, it really comes from the heart. It's born out of a mission to be able to show people, you know, what visual arts can do and how they can be integrated into a fabulous society. And that's, you know, pretty much, you know, celebrating the creative mind.
Yes. And I mean, when we look at those documentaries from Scandinavia and Holland and the places where, and Canada, where the arts are funded with grants.
Yeah.
You see the difference, don't you? I mean, we look at our unmaintained infrastructure and I get really upset and unhappy because I don't want to see America look like a sad cousin.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. When you watch TV, I mean, I see ads now where artists are incorporated into mainstream ads. Wow. Take a look. I mean, there's a few ads that are out there now, and then you'll see like a glimpse of an artist doing things like Bel Gioioso cheese, and there you've got, you know, an artist enjoying his wine and cheese. I mean, very stereotypical, but hey, there you go, you know, or one of the other clothing companies that showed an artist painting, and she was wearing really cool clothes.
Right.
So there is a burgeoning kind of opening because creativity is the new buzzword. You know, everybody needs to be creative and kids and you know, they're encouraging kids. So, you know, maybe this is the open door to that. And I'm hoping that's what it is.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the end of our hour a couple of minutes ago, but I couldn't stop. I was so excited to hear what all the stuff that you were saying. I wasn't going to stop.
I'm gonna say join us in Tucson for the sequel.
Yes. Well, we'll have to do a live show from there.
We'll do a live show in Tucson. There we go.
Yes. Oh, Serena, thank you so much, Rick. Thank you so much. I'm gonna let you guys say your goodbyes to everybody now.
Oh well, thank you, and thank you for everyone for listening. And I'll be sure to share this. Recording with everybody, and it has been so much fun. Thank you, Angie. You are always a delight. Rick, you are just the best friend ever. So it's an honor and a pleasure to know both of you.
Well,
we love you. So glad, Serena, that everything's going well and that you have these wonderful plans, and they're so blessed by their expansiveness and inclusion.
Oh, thank you.
Of all people, I find that refreshing and beautiful. Thank you so much for being you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We need to have adventures soon.
Soon, definitely.
Yes.
I'm on it.
Yes.
I'm on it.
Okay,
this has
bye,
been great.
Everybody. Have a good week. See you next
bye.
Week.
Bye.
We'll
thank you.
Thank you, Angie. Thank you, Serena.
Bye, Serena.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, Rick.
See ya.